Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Because I was blacked down there, I didn't even know what to do. And I was in the ground trying to get back up.
Concussions are not just a problem in the NFL and college, but also in high school athletics. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, October 13th, 2014. I'm Priyanka Deo. Another professional team is coming to Los Angeles, and while it isn't for football, it is for football. Aaron's Ken Masinchi was kicking it at the press conference today.
There seems to be three guarantees in life: death, taxes, and two professional teams for every sport in Los Angeles. While basketball, baseball, and hockey enjoy two teams in close proximity with each other, soccer only has one thanks to the disbandment of Chivas USA on Monday. That all changed quickly a few hours ago when MLS Commissioner Don Garber took the podium in Hollywood.
Today we are here in Los Angeles to announce a brand new strategy for what we in Major League Soccer hope to achieve in this city and, very importantly, throughout the entire state.
The expansion team will be called LAFC for Los Angeles Football Club. Magic Johnson, Mia Hamm, and Tony Robbins headline a massive 22-member ownership group. But the idea for LAFC came from Henry Nguyen, the executive chairman of the team.
Soccer is what ignited my passion in sports. You know, my first live sporting event was an old NASL game, the Diplomats versus the Rowdies.
LAFC hopes to mirror the success of the Los Angeles Galaxy and provide a rivalry similar to the Lakers and Clippers. LAFC president Tom Penn says that the success of the World Cup this past summer shows that soccer can succeed in the U.S. and particularly in L.A.
Where this sport is going, with what this market means, the greater Los Angeles market is the number one market in the country for this sport in particular. There's just so much opportunity.
The LAFC is still working on finding the location for a new stadium. The team will enter the MLS in 2017 along with a team from Atlanta. Ken Masinchi, Annenberg Radio News.
Police officers in LA County are in need of more training to handle the mentally ill. This is from a report released by a consultant hired to reduce the number of mentally ill in county jails. Law enforcement currently use special teams to handle cases concerning people having mental health crises, but it is not enough. A proposal aimed at increasing the amount of training for officers will be developed early next year. This Saturday marks 1 year since TSA officer Gerardo Hernandez was shot and killed inside a terminal at Los Angeles International Airport. Marshall McLean, president of the LAX Police Union, spoke with reporters today criticizing the department and LAPD for making very few changes to improve airport safety. Aaron's Christian Brown reports.
Representatives from the LAX Police Union chided the airport's police force and the LAPD today for gobbling up resources and making it harder to do their jobs. Union President Marshall McLean says money is being funneled out of the department to pay for LAPD officers who rarely work on site.
It matters to you if you live in a city. I live in a city as well, because you're paying for resources to be on your city streets, and they're not there. I mean, you've heard the stories about the ghost cars. We don't need ghost cars. We need cops in those cars. So to know that those cops are sometimes here, sometimes they're not even here when they're being paid to be here.
LAX Police Chief Patrick Gannon pushed back against the union this afternoon, citing several changes made by the department, including improved communications with the LAPD.
I don't think that to make this airport safer, that it's a matter of deploying more officers. We're one of the, I have not found an airport that is in the United States that is policed by its own police agency that has more people than we have here working, policing and securing this particular airport.
Gannon said the agency has steadily added new airport officers since he started 2 years ago, and that patrol rotation has been strictly enforced. McLean says the union will next take their campaign for more funding to Mayor Eric Garcetti. Christian Brown, Annenberg Radio News.
Mm-hmm. the class of 2015 may have more to celebrate other than recent graduates. Several new reports say the job market is looking stronger than it has in years. One report from Michigan State University found that businesses plan to make significantly more hires than last year. The U.S. economy grew at 3.5% in the third quarter. Economists say the largest contribution comes from an increase in exports. Students graduating from for-profit schools might be getting some help from the federal government. For-profit colleges have come under fire in recent years for the number of students who end up defaulting on their student loans. Today, the Obama administration tried to crack down on what it says are unfair practices at these schools.
The White House released a new set of rules today that cut federal funding to for-profit programs that leave students with too much debt. The Los Angeles Times reports that 11% of college students are enrolled at these schools, but these same students account for 44% of all student loan defaults.
SAE Institute. Learn the theory and practice of music production and audio engineering.
School of Audio Engineering student Ryan Shepard says the school has been good to him. He's got a scholarship that covers the majority of his tuition costs. Still, he says it can be difficult to separate the good for-profit schools from the not-so-good.
What I've heard from other students that have gone to other, not even universities, but institutions, they're kind of made a lot of promises, and then as soon as they graduate or are done with that program, they basically just go radio silent.
Constance Elo is a USC expert on urban education. She's written extensively about the for-profit school system.
Obviously, if you have an institution where, you know, students are not getting jobs, and then they have, you know, lots of amounts of debt, you know, that's a place and cause for concern.
The new rules, which start in July 2015, will track the income of graduates over a three-year period. If students are spending more than 20% of their discretionary income on loan payments, the program they graduated from could lose all federal dollars. For-profit schools rely on federal money for 90% of their funding.
I am hoping, though, that when we do talk about the success of the rule, the conversation goes back to the students.
A 2011 attempt to regulate the industry was struck down by federal courts. Jonathan Tolliver, Annenberg Radio News.
The election for California State Superintendent usually goes unnoticed, but this year it's getting attention from around the country. Incumbent Tom Torlakson is facing a challenge from Marshall Tuck in the nonpartisan race. Taylor Haney reports the tension between them represents a rift among California Democrats.
A small group of teachers and parents is holding a press conference today to lambast Marshall Tuck. Tuck and incumbent Tom Torlakson are both Democrats vying for state superintendent. One of the speakers this afternoon will be Cheryl Ortega, who's on the board of directors for United Teachers Los Angeles. She says the fact that Tuck has some corporate donors, including one former Enron trader, makes her nervous.
Why does Enron care who's the superintendent of schools in California?
Tuck's campaign manager, Sonara Lilly, says this idea of Tuck as an investment banker with corporate interests distracts from the real issue.
The real issue is that California schools rank 45th in the nation. 45th. We're number one economy, and our schools rank 45th in math and reading. And fundamentally, that's not okay.
The two candidates represent very different approaches to fixing the state's education system. Labor unions are boosting Torlakson, who wants to fix things within the traditional public school system. And the reform-minded side wants Tuck, who's a bigger supporter of charter schools. It's unclear who voters will choose. Morgan Polakoff from USC's Rossier School of Education has done research on voter opinions on education issues in California. He says voters from all sides need to get informed before Tuesday.
Education in California continues to struggle and has for a very long time, and I think that, you know, we need someone in the office who's very serious about improving education.
And California won't get someone like that if they don't know the candidates. So far, an enormous sum of independent money has poured into this race. A recent tally by EdSource puts it at nearly $20 million. But the money hasn't given either candidate an edge. A field poll released today has them statistically tied, with more than 40% of voters undecided. Taylor Haney, Annenberg Radio News.
With elections less than a week away, local groups throughout Los Angeles are making a final push to mobilize voters. This is a particularly significant year for Asian American communities, which make up the fastest growing population in California. But despite their growing influence, there's been significantly lower turnout among youth and immigrants. To counteract this, Asian Americans Advancing Justice LA, the nation's largest legal and civil rights organization for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, say more needs to be done. Voter engagement manager Tanzila Ahmed stressed the importance of targeted solutions to increase voter participation.
We're not just voting for president or governor. There are so many local races that we're voting for. I think because of this, our vote actually matters even more because we're able to vote on issues that are going to be affecting us on a more personal level.
The group says increased turnout has significant potential to impact key issues such as immigration and healthcare reform. The rest of the evening will have clear skies and a temperature of 60 degrees. Tomorrow, expect rain and a high of 73 degrees. Saturday will be a bit cooler with rain and a high of only 63 degrees during the day and a low of 57 degrees at night. The sun will be back on Sunday, but temperatures will only reach a high of 64 degrees, cooling to 57 degrees by nightfall. Later on Annenberg Radio News, there's a new exhibit at the LACMA that gives us a little taste of Hollywood. The Hollywood costume exhibit is now on display at the LACMA County Museum of Art. Maureen Lee Lenker visited the traveling exhibition to see what it offers film fans.
We may not always notice them, but costumes are essential to filmmaking.
Costumes have always been important in the history of the movies because movies are about people and movies are incredibly emotional.
That's Deborah Noodleman Landis, the curator of the Hollywood costume exhibit. In a film about the exhibit, she spoke about how costumes are more than just a dress on a model.
It wasn't enough to show just the clothes. And that's really when I shifted from thinking about costumes to thinking about movies.
The exhibition showcases this, that costumes aren't standalone pieces, but integral, emotive components of filmmaking and storytelling. From the moment you enter the exhibit, you are asked to step into a cinematic world and to remember the visceral reaction these films and these costumes evoke. There's Dorothy's ruby slippers, Marilyn Monroe's windblown white dress from The Seven-Year Itch, Jack and Rose's clothes from Titanic, and Julia Roberts' red ball gown from Pretty Woman. The exhibit uses an impressive amount of multimedia. A projection of the original actor in the outfit glimmers behind the costumes, and script pages scroll across the screen, setting the scene for the garments. We see so much more than clothes hanging on a plastic model. The exhibit is also a mix of old and new. You can compare real dresses of an era to our contemporary reimagining of these styles. A flapper dress from the 1920 pre-code film Sex is displayed next to a suit and dress from 2013's The Great Gatsby. From Charlie Chaplin's bowler hat and rags that made his iconic Little Tramp, to Amy Adams' disco gown from American Hustle, the exhibit spans the history of movie making and bounces between art films and pop culture phenomenons.
If you're a young kid who only knows The Hunger Games, you'll be happy to show up. And this will probably inspire in a younger audience interest in older films as well, hopefully.
That's animation director Ken Bruce, who I met in the exhibit.
I'm telling everybody I possibly can from this point on. It feels like a once-in-a-lifetime exhibit.
Hollywood Costume runs at LACMA through March 2nd. Maureen Lee Linker, Annenberg Radio News.
Child prostitution and sex trafficking pose a significant challenge for law enforcement. In Los Angeles, police are trying out a more compassionate strategy. I spoke with reporter Mike Kessler, who took on the topic in the new issue of Los Angeles Magazine. Sex trafficking for minors has been this problem for decades. Why are we unable to solve this problem?
One is that, sadly, there's always going to be a demand. That's just a really unfortunate reality that, you know, we have to face. So no matter what, this is always going to go on to some degree. But I think that a big part of the reason that it hasn't been eradicated, let alone even really addressed as a scourge or a social problem, is that In the past, people just saw what they called child prostitutes as willing participants in a victimless crime. In other words, the assumption was made that these girls are just making bad choices. They're rebellious. They're calling each other up and deciding, let's go out and make some extra money, as opposed to being girls who are more often than not coerced.
These areas where this is happening at a street level is very, very close to USC, which is Figueroa's yeah. right around the corner here.
Yeah.
What specific areas does it happen at the street level?
It happens in a number of areas, all over South LA and the rest of the city. The primary tracks, that's sort of slang for stretches of boulevard, where this happens. The tracks, or people call it the blade. The tracks along South Figueroa, not far from USC, not far south of the big airplane, at the Science Museum there at around Fig and Expo, I think. You get a mile south of there and you start to see it. Portions of Long Beach Boulevard that run through Compton are especially busy. Southwestern Avenue also gets pretty busy.
What can we do? It's happening so close to us. It's happening just in front of our eyes. I've walked down Figueroa
sure.
every day almost to go back home.
Don't do it. Don't go down there and try to buy sex. You don't know who it is you're buying from, and regardless of, you can have certain views about prostitution and whether it's wrong or right, moral or not, but, you could be with a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old girl who's there by no means of her own, and she might tell you she's 18, and she might tell you she's 20, and you just don't know, and just don't do anything that can perpetuate that cycle.
That was writer Mike Kessler. You can read his feature story on child prostitution in the November issue of Los Angeles Magazine. Concussions are widely known throughout professional and collegiate athletics, but according to an NFL report, the average high school player is twice as likely to suffer from a brain injury than a college player. Janet Hamey reports on the severity of this issue among high schools within the South LA community.
Hey, pass the ball!
James Barona is one of many athletes who has suffered a concussion. He got his concussion several weeks ago while playing a football game for his school, West Adams Preparatory High School.
Because I was blacked down there, I didn't even know what to do. And I was on the ground trying to get back up. And I felt dizzy, and then I fell back down. And I was going to play, I was going to keep playing, but I had to come out because wherever I hit again, I could probably die. Man.
Barona understands the risk of concussions, but that doesn't stop him from going all out.
I kind of do have fear, but this is a main sport I love. This is my passion and everything. I love doing what I do.
Barona is fortunate to be recovering, but for others, the effects of a concussion can last months or even years. When a player is tackled, there are steps that coaches follow to detect signs of brain damage. Some things include seeing if a player is conscious, asking them questions like their name, where they are, the scores, or who the opponent is. William Stahura, athletic director for Fauché Learning Center, says these procedures are designed to take the decision-making out of the player's hands, because if it were up to them, they would always go back on the field.
If something's too dangerous, it might not be a good idea to let young kids play. I wouldn't let my kid play football. An arm or a leg can break and you can repair it. If you have brain damage, not something that comes back too easily.
High school parents have to sign a consent form that they are aware of the risks of a child playing sports. Even though the consent form relieves schools and LAUSD of legal responsibility, coaches are still responsible for a player's safety. Nelson Beltran coaches Fauché's JV and varsity soccer team.
We try to tell the kids to go out there and have fun, especially, and at the same time, the priority has to be their safety, obviously.
Fauché soccer player Jose Chavez agrees.
My word is just stay safe, take care of yourself, then let any all out on the field.
From professional sports on down to the high school level, there has been pressure to play despite injuries. But with the recent publicity over concussions, some people are calling for a different attitude. Dr. Samia Rafidi is a USC occupational therapy professor.
So I think that education and precautionary measures are always the number one way to deal with this. But then also maybe the NFL and or high school sports need to reassess the rules of playing the game.
Rafidi says penalizing players who are hitting above the waist or shoulders could be effective in preventing concussions. Reform at the high school level could lead the way for professional sports to change its attitude and take better precautions for players' safety. Janet Hyman, Annenberg Radio News.
Nurses play an important role in the world of healthcare. They are familiar faces, spending a lot of time in direct contact with patients. Today, the California Action Coalition Committee met at Cal State Los Angeles to discuss how nursing is advancing healthcare in the state.
Nursing students and healthcare workers filled a Cal State ballroom to learn about the demands of an evolving healthcare system. Mary Dickow, the statewide director for California Action Coalition, says recent changes to the healthcare system make the summit important.
Highlights will be that we are going to focus on all of the pillars of the campaign. The campaign is the bigger structure on which the Action Coalition sit under. So we'll focus on education, leadership, scope of practice, diversity, and interprofessional education and collaboration.
The coalition wants nurses to become better leaders in the medical field to match the increased demand for care. It says nurses should be full partners with physicians and other healthcare professionals as the healthcare system grows. Belinda Kai, Annenberg Radio News.
And now we check in with Kevin Zellman to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
We have the LAPD who are helping kids in the community learn how to stay safe this Halloween, and one community is calling for death with dignity. Find out what they want from local leaders.
Thanks, Kevin. Now it's time for our weekly Sports Minute with Evan Budrovich. The Trojans are heading up to Pullman, Washington, hoping to avoid a Halloween weekend nightmare.
Let's be honest here. Playing in Pullman makes for quite the spooky experience. The conditions predict fog as far as the eye can see. Chilling 46-degree temperatures, and a 50% chance of rain.
You know, this game is obviously extremely unique, playing Washington State. You know, they just have such a different style of which they do things.
That was USC football head coach Steve Sarkisian. The Cougars throw the football more than any team in college, averaging nearly 500 yards passing per game. Now, it's all about slowing down an offense that has given them trouble in weeks past.
And so I think we're gradually moving in that direction. We're making more plays on the ball than we did earlier in the year. We just need to continue to build.
In terms of playing in those wet, windy conditions, holding on to the football will be paramount. In order to win, USC will have to rely upon the players they trust most.
We worked a lot of wet ball stuff earlier in the week this week just to try to get the guys prepared. When it is that way, you get the ball in the hands of the people that you know you can trust, that you can count on.
USC lost to Washington State last season in embarrassing fashion and will look to bounce back this Saturday at 1:30 p.m. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
There are some places on the USC campus where the Halloween spirit is year-round. Andy Vasoyan takes us to the USC Movie Archives, which collects and preserves student films.
In a creaking old building underneath a long stairwell in the basement of a theater, there is a door. Behind the door, there is a man, and that man is Dino Everett, the archivist of USC's School of Cinematic Arts. One of his more notorious projects is Shock Value, a compilation of short works from USC alums, including Dan O'Bannon, who helped design the chest-bursting scene in Alien. Here's a breathy scene from O'Bannon's film, Bloodbath, shot in 1969.
And now this is when the operator, like, realizes, oh my God.
The flick also includes John Carpenter, director of Halloween and The Thing. Everett found the audio track from Carpenter's Lady Madonna, which takes place in a convent.
This very staircase which we are now climbing is remarkable, in that indeed, no nails or screws were used in its construction.
There's some bad interactions between people, and there's a bat attack at some point.
And that's all we have for this Thursday from all of us at Annenberg Radio News. I'm Priyanka Deo.
We'll be right back.